This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Spiegel and Holmes.
I definitely listened to 6-7 Score growing up for sure. Driving around in the car with my dad, he'd always have it on.
Afternoons on the Score.
Friends of mine have said, why don't you sell? Why don't you get out? And my answer always has been, I like what I'm doing, as bad as it is. And what else would I do? I'm a boring guy. I don't play golf. I don't play bridge. What else would I do? And I want to make it better. I want to make it better before I go.
You know what, Jerry Reinsdorf? Happy birthday, by the way, to Jerry Reinsdorf. Oh, I watch baseball, too. I like baseball. I like watching it. So it's a good time to bring in our guest, Maury Brown. Bizball Maury on Twitter. He of multiple publications, but always great at just knowing the business of sports, specifically baseball. And Maury, we welcome you into the show. Anthony here on Layla Rahimi in for Spiegel and Holmes. And I would just like to, I think, start with your impressions of the news that you heard when it was broken over the weekend that Justin Ishbia was not only going to stop his pursuit of the Twins, but also buy reportedly more shares of the White Sox.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously interesting. I think if you're a Twins fan, you're in a bit of shock, right? It's been interesting how the White Sox have framed it. He's not buying more stake in it. The minority owners that are there own their stakes. We don't even know what Jerry Reinsdorf owns in totality, right? He's, and I don't even think, the largest investor, but he's been the controlling interest for the longest of times. I see it as a net positive, of course. You wouldn't do that kind of investment if you didn't ultimately want to gain control of the club. Jerry Reinsdorf has made it clear that at some point he wants to sell it. How that process works is the big question that nobody can seem to answer right now. But I do see it as a net positive for Chicago. I don't see how you couldn't. I mean, he's got all of the pedigree that you would want, that Major League Baseball would want, given the fact that there's the interest, of course, in Phoenix in terms of the Suns and the WNBA there. So they understand how to work within the owner's ranks. And he seems, you know, young and has a lot of resources to work with.
And with those resources in mind, then, what do you think is likely as far as how this times up for Jerry Reinsdorf, for the White Sox? If, you know, the conjecture has been that when Jerry passes, then the Suns are just going to unload the team anyway. Do you think this adjusts that timing at all?
You know, I'm not so sure. And, this is something that they've really held close to the vest. I would imagine that you wouldn't go into something like this, right? Especially, again, I mean, let's go back to the Twins. And they were making all the overtures just right there, and then to suddenly do a hard right turn like that and jump into the White Sox, I can't imagine that, of course, that the end game here isn't to have a controlling interest. But the timing of it is the larger question. My guess, right, is that there's something formal in place that says here's a succession order, whether it happens directly when Jerry passes away or whether it happens right before or how that looks, only they seem to know. But it seems like continuing to gobble up controlling interest in the club or getting to the point where there is a substantial enough interest in the club that he's the controlling interest. Again, not always, you don't always have the person with the most skin in the game as the controlling interest. But oftentimes it makes sense, obviously, to have that person there, the ultimate decision maker, if they put the most money in.
Maury, I appreciate the work, especially now that you and other writers at Forbes are doing when it comes to trying to figure out the value of teams, because it's gone up so much with the advent of legalized sports gambling. And the White Sox valuation being at $2.05 billion, reportedly 15th in Major League Baseball. What do you think of that valuation? And do you consider it low or high based on the fact that this is the third biggest media market in the country?
Yeah, it's low, but it's low for a few reasons. You know, I think people forget that when New Kaminsky Park came online, right? It's now Rates Field, right?
Yes.
That it was really the first retro ballpark. I mean, it preceded Camden Yards, and it really didn't fit. It, you know, it was a baseball only facility. And there, you know, you can have a conversation of whether there should be more life left in certain ballparks and whatnot. But it's pretty clear that they want to try and get a new one done. But there's obviously still the money that is owed on it. There's still, you know, outstanding debt that the club is carrying and whatnot. I would say that the reason it's where it's at right now is obviously it's just depreciated over its stand and its place in the standings. I mean, it's just been deplorable. You had obviously a record last year in losses, and you know you don't want to sit there, a club worth, you know, over $2 billion, and be sitting at the end of last year with the 23rd player payroll in the league. Now, maybe that was by design. If you're going to sell it, right, the idea is to lower, you know, the cost and everything that's involved in it. By the same token, the value, you're trying to play a balancing act, right? You don't want to be the Dodgers, let's say, if you're trying to sell it, or maybe the Mets. At the same time, you don't want to be the A's and the Pirates and, you know, hanging around the 23rd and you're having a conversation about being sandwiched between the Nationals and the Orioles and close to the Reds and the Pirates is not where you want to be. So again, I think that a lot of it, you know, in the media market that it is, should be higher. But again, the media market now, that becomes a little bit of a nebulous thing with how we're at this inflection point with how media rights and streaming and everything along with it. I mean, and the White Sox are smack dab in the middle of it right now as they try to venture out with a new RSN really last year and trying to do something. They still haven't gotten carriage on Comcast. I know they're doing over the air. I know they have a direct to consumer product, but those things, when you're not wrapped up in a long-term deal for carriage with somebody like Comcast, they do have DirecTV, right? But it's some smaller ones. It really is dependent upon how you do in the standings, and you're no longer tethered to a long-term deal where you get a lot of money. And so if you're doing direct consumer, you'd have to be a pretty diehard fan to go, you know what, I'm going to shell out the money right now because I just want to go watch historically bad baseball.
And we're talking to Maury Brown of Forbes, and I wanted to follow up on it, Maury, because the White Sox, for example, don't own their ballpark outright, right? They're tenants of a ballpark that is publicly funded. For example, the Dodgers, part of the reason they had such a massive valuation wasn't only because of their huge TV deal. You know, I remember the parking lots surrounding Chavez Ravine being a big deal, and that was part of the ballpark issue when it came to the sale of the team. Like, the real estate did matter. So how do you factor that in? This is a team that could decide, we want to own a ballpark. You know, the Cubs, for example, I wonder about their valuation based on everything at Wrigley and how that fits in to what they consider. You know, we heard Tom Ricketts, for example, say he was investing in the team when he mentioned the ecosystem around Wrigley. Does that go, let's just focus on the Cubs for a second in that discussion. When you consider the Cubs, does that factor into part of what Forbes considers is the value of the team?
So it's interesting you say that. No.
Ah.
And here's why. So here's why. The development around the ballpark, right? So I'm going to go ahead and use the only club that has publicly available money in the Braves. So they have the battery, which is the development around it. That is owned by a different company. Yes, the Atlanta Braves, Liberty Media, who owns them, has a large chunk of it. And yes, it surrounds the ballpark. So you assume that that is counted because, of course, during ball games, all that walk-up business is there. But it's on a separate ledger.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are in a situation like that, there's, again, if they go and build that development around a proposed White Sox new ballpark, then yes. Do you want to own it? Yes, suppose you could and want to say that you do that. I don't know if they need to own it and outright. You could have, obviously, outside investors and whatnot in it. But let's say for all intents and purposes you do. The reason for that would be it's not just the revenues that you would rake in on game day. It would be the concerts. It would be, you know, Supercross. It would be non-game day events that you then control all of those revenues as well. So what you're starting to see now is owners of clubs starting to look at it more as an enterprise. I want to be able to control the revenues inside the ballpark. I also want to develop around the ballpark, do mixed-use development, because largely, mostly, real estate values go up. And you can always sell that if you need to, right? If you hold on to it, you can't really sell a portion of your ballpark. So that is the model. And again, because it kind of masks the money around it. When Major League Baseball says they had $12.1 million in gross revenues last year, that's not accounting for any ballpark villages that are around there. That's additional money that those owners are making. They don't have to always pour into player payroll. They probably should, or they have that there instead of maybe having to make cash calls or go into debt against their values of their clubs. But again, what you're looking for is flexibility and having it diversified enough that, okay, you know, if it's not going well and we're not doing well in terms of attendance or whatever it is, I have these properties that I can do something with and these businesses inside them.
You're mentioning a bit about just being able to control and maximize expenses, not only with the stadium itself, but the surrounding area here. If there is a work stoppage and you come out of it at some point with baseball having some sort of a salary floor and a salary cap, then in theory that should end up enhancing the profits and the evaluation of these organizations as well, right? So do you think there's going to be a work stoppage, and how much will that end up impacting the valuations of the clubs?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, this is kind of an important point because you hit on the main things. Why do we want a cap? I think Tony Clark said it maybe most succinctly, the head of the MLBPA. You don't see a cap on owners' money, right? Cap is on player salaries. So that would increase the value of those clubs. It would allow owners to make more money because they're not having to pour in as much around their player payroll. Now, look, there's a median within that. There are some clubs that will never reach the top. They would never come near a cap to begin with. And then there are, of course, the clubs up above. What the league really needs is increased revenue sharing. I mean, a cap kind of serves as a way to tamp down on that. But if they can't get that, and I don't believe they will, then they have to look at increased revenue sharing. To your larger question on whether we're going to have a protracted lockout, well, it sure looks like it. You're certainly going to have from now on, and there's a belief around all of sports that the going model now is the minute a labor agreement expires, that ownership will induce a lockout at every single one of them, NFL, NHL, NBA, Major League Baseball. And so the difference is, of course, while it's not good, you can't do transactions, players can't go rehab in team facilities, and you're stuck in neutral. An off-season lockout, of course, is a lot different than something where you're like, the owner's doing a hard push for a cap. That absolutely has the impact of going into regular season games. For those that don't remember, 2022, the season was pushed out a week, and they were still able to fit in 162 games. And now there was some talk about a cap and a floor. The players are fine with a floor. I mean, there are a lot of clubs. I believe that that's a larger problem than a cap. But there are other ways around this. If they go into this thing and they see that there's no way that a cap is going to come around, well, we can look at things like maybe controlling deferred compensation, which skews heavily in favor of large revenue, large market teams. And there are other ways to do this. But, you know, again, I 94, 95, maybe because I remember it being so painful at a time when they're in a bit of a growth spurt and the media rights landscape is so unstable and in a state of chaos, you wouldn't want to be in a protracted work stoppage with that in the middle of it. I mean, you've seen what ESPN's already doing by disengaging with Major League Baseball as part of their opt-out clause. Fox and TBS, their deals are due up in 28.
Wow. That's something I didn't realize, Maury, is how quickly the other deals were coming up as well.
Right.
Maury Brown from Forbes, you are always informative. I'm sure we will be bugging you a lot more over the course of this baseball season. And I said, Twitter, you are on Blue Sky, so forgive me for that. Old habits, that's where I usually would find your stuff. So Maury's on Blue Sky. He is also on Instagram, and he's on Forbes, and he is helping us figure out the numbers. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. You guys take care. Have a great day.
Thanks, Maury. We will be bothering you more. That's somebody has answers and we need
right.
them. Forbes are the ones, I think, who always give us the best valuation of teams. So it sounds like we might have some more time during the season to catch up with him. Anthony Heron is in for, I guess, all of us, right? We're all in for Spiegel and Holmes.
I take up enough space where yeah. I can fill in for everyone simultaneously.
Yeah, we're both in for Spiegel and Holmes, Aunt and Layla. And I have to ask you about this text message you sent our group thread. I'm sharing it with everybody so we can all be held accountable here because right. this was hilarious.
Yeah, there's a few things that that tend to rattle around my brain when we get to this part of the season.
After you sent a Darkwing Duck GIF. Happy to tell some uncomfortable stories from my combine experience back in the day. Being Something by Jerry Jones that I can't read. John Fox with dip all throughout his teeth. Gas battles with Justin Smith and being stuck in a hospital with a balding Chris Winkie.
Oh,
that
man.
Is not a medical condition. Are we going to talk about these things next?
I think we should.
All right, let's do it. That's next on The Score.